Hello, welcome to the Real Talk 239, Bouncing Back. I'm so happy to be here with you guys. And we're here today as a group of therapists, and we're working and just want to have a discussion on bouncing back as our economy and our local economies are starting to reopen. And how does that affect us with our mental health? So my name is Dr. April Brown. I'm one of the therapists at Cape Coral Therapists. And I'm going to introduce the rest of the cohorts of therapists here as we begin this discussion. So let's start off with Elizabeth. Elizabeth, can you tell us a little bit about yourself?
I am Elizabeth. I'm a registered intern in the state of Florida, and I specialize in addiction primarily. I do enjoy addiction. I also treat anxiety, depression, do some career counseling, that type of thing. Really looking forward to this discussion today because even as therapists, we all can use a little help and some learned knowledge at this point. So we're really enjoying being here today.
Okay, thank you for being here and for sharing what about the stuff that you're going to share. Next, Dr. Kelly.
Hi, I'm Dr. Kelly Boucher, and I am a licensed mental health counselor. And I have my PhD in psychology, and I love working with rebellious teenagers.
Okay.
And I also help people with stress and anxiety and sleep deprivation.
Awesome. Good,
Good to
good.
be here.
Yes, thank you. And Jessica?
Hi, yes. My name is Jessica Sagasume. I'm also a licensed mental health therapist here in Florida. And I also was just recently licensed to be a therapist in New Jersey as well. And my special population that I work with, or the area that I specialize in, would be working with adolescents and adults, specifically dealing with anxiety, depression, grief, women's issues, and Latino community, specifically also with the immigration population. But anything Latin, Hispanic is my area as well.
Okay, awesome. Thank you so much, Jessica. And David, Dr. Hall.
Hi, I'm Dave Hall. So I'm a LMHC, the licensed mental health counseling intern, and I specialize in getting to the bottom of what's bugging people, what causes the depression, their anxiety, the emotional pain people have. I've just spent some time with a client today, and really amazing what happens when you get down to what is really bothering you. And that's my specialty.
Okay, yes. Give it peace and meaning. Yes. Okay. Again, my name is Dr. April, and I specialize actually in relationship stress, sex, and intimacy, and also anxiety, which is what a lot of us are experiencing now and trying to bounce back is that anxiety that's going on. Yes. And today we're talking about bouncing back, just like a ball here, that how do we bounce back to what some people may call, is this a new norm or is this a something else? So my first question to you guys, are we mentally prepared for reopening? Yes. Any thoughts on that?
Oh, I like that. You have the poll there.
Yeah, there's a poll there. Yes,
I'm
yes.
going to put yes.
Yes. If you see the poll there, please fill it out. For those who are listening, this is being recorded. So if you don't want your face or name to show, just you can change the name. Oh, I'm not sure why the recording has stopped. Okay.
Good job.
Good. So has anyone responded?
Yes.
Oh, yes. Yes, so most of us are not really mentally prepared for reopening. Yes, about 67%. And I didn't actually put mines in, and I'm gonna say the same thing that I sometimes don't feel like I'm mentally prepared to reopen. But what does that mean as we talk about this?
This survey is fantastic. I love this. This is really good.
Yes. What do you guys think it means to be mentally prepared to reopen?
Elizabeth?
Well, I think that it means that we first of all, have to accept that things are not going to be the same. And that, you know, we need to pop, I've been telling my clients to learn what lessons are we learning. I'm learning that I like the different pace that is being perceived in my life, as far as the number of clients that I'm seeing, how I'm doing my sessions and those type of things. I'm learning that I like it. And so I'm hoping that it can stay at this pace. As far as being mentally prepared, I'm trying to remain a positive attitude, to not be catastrophizing thinking, getting too far out there. When I do that, I say stop it and get myself programmed back to what's happening right here and right now. I think that for me is the biggest way I can mentally prepare myself for this.
Right. You said about catastrophizing. I think many of us are in what we call a fear zone. Yeah, that we're afraid about things going back because a lot of us have lost not only jobs, but of course, people, celebrations such as birthdays and that kind of stuff.
I'm getting ready to travel in the next couple weeks. I flew to El Salvador in the 80s and never even thought twice about it. And I remember even being on the plane thinking, did I tell anybody I was going? Oh, well, I guess they'll find out I left. And that was like for a 2-week trip to El Salvador in the 1980s with guerrilla warfare. Never thought twice about it. And now I'm pausing and I'm just going to Michigan, which may seem third world right now, but it's not.
Right. Yes.
And I'm apprehensive. I have to say I'm apprehensive. And right. I bought my seat, which I don't, unless I'm in first class and get bumped up. I usually don't care where I sit. If I'm in the middle, fine. And now I'm like, so I actually bought my seat on both legs so that I knew where I was sitting based on what was available.
Okay.
Are you more anxious about being on the plane and in the airport or about going to Michigan and being, what are you most anxious about?
Oh, just being in the middle seat.
Yeah.
I don't mind. I'm in any airline that I've been in, even in first class, you are not 6 feet from the person next to you.
Right.
Or even the aisle practically. So I don't have, how can I practice social distancing? Honestly. Mm-hmm. I can't.
So it's something that can make you very anxious about it. And for those people out there listening, if you have any questions as we're talking about all of this, please chime in. But yeah, Dr. Kelly says it's dealing with the fear of things we have no control over.
Yeah,
I mean, that's one thing.
Unfortunately, as counselors, we don't make enough money to fly private air.
Right. Yeah.
But I don't think they're going to have middle seats anymore.
No.
I did hear somebody say, they were talking about it, and they said, well, you know, after 9/11, a lot of the precautions never left. Like, I remember when we first traveled and we had to take our shoes off, and it was like, are you kidding? I have to walk on this floor?
Yeah.
You're going to, you know, it was pretty intense. But because we wanted to be safe, we just acquiesced, and we said, hey, okay, I'll take my shoes off and you can, and we went through the different things. Okay, no liquid and all the other rules. And we said yes, because we wanted to be safe. And now we're all accustomed to it. So I wonder about the changes that will happen post-COVID, mm-hmm. if we ever will be post-COVID.
I saw an article, just the title of an article in the medical literature last week. And back in the 19 early 80s, 81 and so on, we were dealing with a new organism called HIV. And it was spread by body fluids, including blood. And I was working in an emergency department, and we developed something called universal precautions. And that means you assume that every patient has HIV. And so you wear gloves, you make sure that you don't get any bodily fluids. on broken skin or mucous membranes. And we did that in relationship to blood, sputum, bodily fluids, whatever. And we got very comfortable. Today, it is second nature. It's not, you don't even think about it, you just do it. Mm-hmm. And so the title of this article was, it's time for universal respiratory precautions. That means you make sure that you don't breathe the same air that somebody else is breathing. And you don't touch things that other people have touched, you don't touch without gloves. And you wash your hands frequently, and you just treat everybody as if their breath, their skin, and anything they touch, and anything you see that somebody might have touched, is infected. Just assume that, and you behave. You develop a way of interacting with things around you and people around you, based on that knowledge, and that will become very comfortable. People will just do that in a matter of 6 months. It's been 3 already, 4, whatever it's been.
I think some people are still struggling with that. And also, and going back to bouncing back our psychological resiliency, we miss the connections we have with people. Mm-hmm. You know, and that's something, because we're social human beings.
Yeah, even the introverts are struggling right now. I've been reading some posts on social media, and they're like, at first they were saying a couple months ago, hey, I'm an introvert, doesn't bother me none. And now the introverts are, you know. So, we need that human contact. We need that human connection. And technology doesn't cut it. Even though I'm very happy to see all of you, I would prefer a face-to-face meeting.
Right, definitely. Yeah. Jessica, what are your thoughts on all this?
I think for me, the question that pops up is, what is reopening going to look like, and how are we going to take, or what the steps and up to what line are we going to draw when it comes to the precautions, as David said, especially with someone that struggles with anxiety, I can imagine that it's easy to fall into the mental spiral of just wondering, okay, what is that going to look like? What steps am I going to need to take to be able to protect myself from not breathing the same air as other people or being in contact? Because reality is that we're fighting something that's very different. It's not seen, so it's invisible. And so just being able to grasp that reality and be able to also live life in a way that is livable, and we're enjoying life, taking into consideration what the new normal will look like for us. I think that's the big thing for me. I was recently talking to another therapist that was describing her experience in California with COVID, and she struggles with anxiety herself, and she had to go out to the grocery store and she had her mask on. And for a second, she was triggered because of not being able to breathe the way she normally would. And at that moment, she had to pull the mask off her face. And immediately she noticed the glances and the stare at the grocery store. And she was saying, you know, she put it right back on, but she was saying how people around her did not realize her own internal struggle and her own battle at that very moment with her own thoughts. And, I just, like I mentioned, I just can't help but wonder what this is going to mean for a lot of people, and people who haven't even struggled with anxiety having to struggle with some feelings.
Yeah.
Yeah, definitely. And thanks, Jessica, put up a great little brochure that we're going to be working on who do you want to be during COVID-19. And it talks about what we're talking about. It's kind of that fear zone of how, you know, we don't know. We don't have control over it. And also that what Dr. Kelly was saying about us being isolated, and Marie is saying that she has finding a very hard time because she hasn't been able to actually go to church. I mean, it's, of course, even with spiritual things, they say, you know, being sometimes isolating and praying by yourself. But church is also a very, very community-based thing. And so where the church, feed off one another. Yes.
The church of the living room is not cutting it.
Yes.
Yeah. That one's for you, Dr. Hall.
Yes, I've heard that one before. I love it every time. It's good. That's really good. You know, and we have in churches in the last 20 years have really come up with a small group concept. A lot of churches have small groups, and they can be 6 to 8 to 12 or even 20 people. And so now these small groups are all meeting online. And, you know, if you're already in a small group, it's great. You go to a Zoom meeting at your whatever day of the week, whatever time, whatever hour you have during the week, you go and there's your friends. And I have two such groups that I'm involved in. But for people who've never been part of a small group, you know, it takes time to get really, really comfortable with people who are strangers. You don't really know them.
And how well can they get to know you through technology? I know some people meet their life mates on tech via the internet, and technology hasn't been that for me, but I need to see people face to face. But I think that when we talk about resiliency, people that really struggled with technology before are getting better at it. They didn't know what Zoom was or how to do it. Some of my aunts, they're older, they're like getting really tech privy. And so we as humans are very innovative and we are resilient. I think where we're going to be even more resilient is if we stop resisting and say, you know what, we have to do this. No matter what, we have to do this and we better adapt. So I'll stop resisting and I will take my place in this as it unfolds.
Yeah, I like that you talk about the technology, because that, you know, in and of itself has really created a lot of challenges for people, not only feeling anxious about what's going on, but now, like you said, Dr. Boucher, about having to learn how to access Zoom and get on Zoom meetings and things like that. And I'm going to send a shout out to my mother, because she is getting really good with me doing our Zoom sessions and our Zoom meetings, and now we play our quiz club online, and she can read the questions, which helps cognitively for both of us. So in that respect, the technology, you know, having to learn it and use it has really been showing good resilience, especially for myself and then my mother, who's 20 years older. So I think that's helped really a lot with the technology.
Fantastic, Nancy.
Yes, awesome. And what you're talking about, Dr. Kelly, is kind of the next part of that circle. I don't know if I can share it on the big screen, but it talks about the learning zone. Yeah, I don't know if Jessica could share it. But basically, the learning zone is kind of what you're saying, Dr. Kelly, is stop resisting and actually start to learn some new things. Because I think that's kind of what being in this process is teaching us how to do things a little differently.
Yes.
So as you see, we were talking before about the fear zone.
Yes.
And Dr. Kelly has moved us into the learning zone here.
Yes. From the fear zone to the learning zone. It's just think of this like how the phases begin to unfold, and how, like, before we were in phase one, we were in the fear zone, and now here in Florida, our phase two started today. Even they opened up my gym here at the, you know, our homeowners association did that. And now we're in phase two, and that's the learning zone, learning how we're going to even cope with all of this. But look at the learning zone. It says, I start to give up what I can't control. That's acquiescing and relinquishing and say, you know what, I'm going to move forward. Identifying your emotions. I don't like this. This is still not comfortable for me. And by being honest with those, you know, emotions, I think that will take us into the growth zone.
Yeah, I struggle with, I start to give up what I can't control. That's what, yes. Yeah, yeah, because we can't control many of these things here.
Hardly anything.
Yes.
Yeah. People that have anxiety, initially my clients with anxiety, I thought that they were really going to be tipped over, but they weren't. The people that already had experienced anxiety, they were fine. It's the people that have never really felt stress and anxiety before that I'm concerned about now, because it's like they are really having a difficult time. And you
say that, Dr. Kelly, so I'm wondering if you've had anxiety or you've had past things that you've had to overcome, you've built up skills or built up resiliency to manage something that you cannot control.
I haven't really had anxiety, like an anxiety disorder, but I have had stress that has tipped into the anxiety area. Mm-hmm. And I think that if you have a predisposition, we all have a different predisposition towards an anxiety or towards a disorder. So some people, let's say they didn't have obsessive compulsive disorder or OCD before, but which is the need to, you know, you have a compulsion to control things. And now perhaps if you had a predisposition towards OCD and you might have had a propensity towards trying to control your environment, then this could have, this environment and what we're experiencing now might tip you over into the OCD. Does that make sense?
Yeah, I can imagine, you know, what happens to somebody with OCD in the COVID-19 situation. That must be
nightmarish.
Oh yeah, tough, really tough.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Has anybody had any, without naming clients' names, obviously, or where we're, you know, counseling them, has anybody had any OCD clients have it triggered to, you know,
yes.
Yes.
I think that OCD, you can be very fearful of germs and things like that. So I think it's like a matter of, did the COVID-19, you know, exacerbate their OCD, or was the OCD there and then COVID-19 came in and, you know, really cleaning everything, afraid to touch things. I have a couple clients that are afraid, and they're in the restaurant industry, to return to work because of the fact that, you know, will it be clean enough? Will they social distance people? And so they're having a very difficult time, you know, trying to come to terms with going back to work and being in an environment like this where they don't, where they, you know, feel that, you know, germs and, you know, being around people and, you know, being that close, it's very anxiety provoking for them. So we're working on, you know, with anyone that has OCD, trying to desensitize them, to look at some of the rituals they might do that, you know, and working on suggestions on how to, you know, change their thoughts and work with this anxiety.
Excellent.
Yeah, I think another good tool is sometimes just using the mindfulness, of course, you know, realizing that the moment you're safe. Because many times what causes us to have our hearts go patter-patter, it's because we worry about things that are either before our time or, you know, in the future or in the back.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Definitely. Any other thoughts about this? Also, I think the other thing I'm just thinking about in the learning zone is grief. Have you guys wondered that we are having to grieve like we've never had before?
Yeah. It's completely altered. Well, for example, we didn't get to have a funeral for my cousin who passed away, not of COVID, but in the hospital in Michigan. And he passed away and we weren't able to have a funeral for him. and his own sister who worked in the same hospital, because it wasn't her shift, she didn't get to go in and see her own brother. So she has, you know, when you look at, is it Kubler-Ross's five stages of grief, and you go through the stages, I honestly think, and I started to do a little bit of research on this two nights ago, that the whole Kubler-Ross's stages of grief is going to have to be, you know, analyzed or looked at a little bit differently. Because we didn't even have a chance to bargain. We didn't even have a chance to deny it. You're just, bam, there you are. And you don't get to have a funeral.
Or a hug.
You don't get to hold their hand. And then the people, and my cousin is a nurse, so she's already empathic, and not that we all can't be that, but she's sensitive and caregiving, and she couldn't hold her brother's hand. And so he died alone. So I think that there's a lot of people that may have false guilt, more than usual. And like you also said earlier, Dr. April, you had mentioned that people have the loss of celebrations, the loss of graduation, some people aren't able to get married. And sure, it's true. We see the beautiful church in France, and then they have pictures of their parishioners, and then the bride is coming down and with her dad, and there's six people in the room, and you're like, this isn't my dream wedding, you know? And they grieve that. Now, yes, we're resilient. And it shows the resiliency of the human spirit to that. Look how we can adapt. And we can do things differently. But we still grieve that we weren't able to do it the way we wanted to.
Yeah, you in your learning zone, the first thing is I start to give up what I can't control. We can't have a funeral. I can't have the wedding I planned. Then just below the middle, it says I become aware of the situation, you know, the way it really is this way. And to me, resiliency is that, you said earlier, you said stop resisting, you know, stop wishing it was some different way and just deal with it the way it is. Easy to say. It's easy to say. I'm not sure how easy it is to do that, but I think when push comes to shove and we realize, no, I can't do this and I can't do that, it's life-threatening to do this thing, it's pretty easy to accept, okay, I'm not going to do that thing. That might take my life, so I guess I won't do it.
Right.
That really is a real key to resiliency, I think, is recognizing it really is this way and there's nothing I can do. The things I can't do, goes back to serenity prayer, you know, help me recognize.
And I think another thing with what you're saying, David, is aside from recognizing, or the next step would be making a choice, a conscious choice to accept and learn to be okay and enter into that perspective of saying, I can choose to continue to fight against all the things that I feel are just not fair, or should it be the way it should be? You know I've talked to a lot of people that say, I just don't understand. Everything was going so well. The economy was doing so much better. Business was picking up. And now this has to happen. And we can stay stuck, and we can stay fixed in that mental state of mind. But ultimately, we also have to recognize the effects that that's having on us. So if we choose to move past it, and we choose to want to live a life that is tolerable, and it is more than tolerable, it's fulfilling and nurturing, we have to learn to adapt to it, which is I believe a characteristic that we all naturally have in us, is to be adaptable and to survive. And it's okay recognizing that it's okay to be in that state of survival for a degree, because it's part of the thriving, like we mentioned the last episode that we had, that it's okay to be in survival mode, and eventually it's going to get us into that place of being able to make meaning and make purpose out of all of this, but being patient with that process as well.
Excellent. You know, I think that the point really comes down to that not all balls bounce, and not all people are going to bounce back, but most balls do bounce. And if people actually say, you know what, I want to be that ball that bounces. I want to be that person that says, I will try at least. And the people that say, I can't, I just encourage those people that say, you know what, just give it a shot. But we're all kind of feeling like we're at capacity. And I have this little example. I have this, you guys know what this is? Can you see?
I can't see you. I don't know what's going on. I got you.
There you go.
I can see it. It's a, a ketchup.
Yes. I got this from Arby's a while back, the whole ketchup. And the thing about this right here is that it has a capacity, right? It'll only hold so much. But the way these are designed, it'll open up.
Oh, really?
And yes. Look, yeah. I'm just pulling a little bit on this. And this has a greater capacity than we may have even thought it did. And when you open it up,
wow,
it will hold twice as much. And that's the way that it's designed. So I think that we, as humans, are so amazing at our capacity. And we do have that ability to hold and take so much more. In our country, we've actually experienced that. I don't know about you guys, but I have been stretched to my capacity.
Mm-hmm.
I truly have. And I was shocked at how much I really could stretch. But I'm there now. I'm as far stretched as I can be. So I'm really appreciating the things that I'm learning from our time together today, too.
Mm-hmm. I think what's also helped, but still a struggle sometimes, is the next one. Even though we are stretching, but so much information is coming to us. And sometimes we don't know if it's true or false. And so, you know, people ask, can I really go back? Or should I go back, do this? And for me, I think we all have to do something for ourselves. You have to figure out what is your truth.
Yeah. Right.
Yeah. Are any of you guys struggling with knowing what is true and what's false as you evaluate information? And
I'm getting medical updates every day. I'll get six different articles, research articles on, you know, associations with COVID-19, whether it's association with diabetes or hypertension, what drugs are working, what drugs aren't working, different features of the disease and what it does. And, you know, and you hear the controversy. If you watch, I watch the news, and you recommend I don't, Kelly. I think in your diagram, it says stop eating the food and stop watching the news incessantly. And I'm like, no, I'm still doing both. But, you know, you watch the news and you hear these controversies over drugs and everything else. And, you know, and I'm reading the articles as they come out, the research papers, and, you know, we don't know. And it's okay. It's okay that we don't know. Things will sort out over time. So
yes.
Yeah, and I think it's kind of what it is that we're all doing the best we can.
Yeah.
I think when you talked about acceptance, you know, and Dr. Kelly, you mentioned Kubler-Ross, that is one of the stages of loss is acceptance. It's actually the last stage. So getting to acceptance with all of this, as we process our losses, the anger, the, like we said, the bargaining, the denial, whatever. But again, that acceptance, as hard as it might feel sometimes, you know, the fact that, you know, especially with graduation going on right now, and these kids are, you know, they're doing the best they can. And it's really actually, you know, it's uplifting and it is inspiring to see how they're coping with these types of losses with their, you know, graduations, kind of rites of passages, and getting creative and accepting that this is what it is right now. I think that we, you know, that can help all of us that may be having a hard time, you know, wondering, are we, like, you know, be able to fly again, or, you know, vacations that are planned long-term, you know, how is this going to look? But again, accepting that this is what it is for now, and you know, and rolling with that.
I think with Kubler-Ross, I think there's just no bargaining now. We don't get to bargain. We don't have a dog in the fight. We're just along for the ride, and that's what it feels like, doesn't it?
You know what? There's another element of resiliency here that's really powerful in my mind. A while ago, a month or two ago, you know, somebody said, "Hey, we're at war. This is the equivalent of warfare. This is." And I think, I read a lot of World War II history and the bombing of London we had a time here in this country with a civil war, and we had, during wartime, people rise to the occasion, whether they're at home or in the fight. And we talked about it already, acceptance. And there is, if you see, I see on the news constantly every night, I see videos of healthcare workers, EMTs, first responders being, celebrated for their work in the face of risk, choosing to risk their very lives to help people who are ill and dying. And we also see the cheering of, 104-year-old woman who spent 40 days in the hospital and went home, feeling amazing, pretty well. And it's like, oh my gosh, And so these stories of, it is heroism. And it's not only heroism of those who provide care, but it's also the heroism of those suffering who survive, or the grace of those who die. Like, they still accept them. There's a degree of acceptance even in death, I think. It's like, okay, I'm going to die. You hear it in the stories of those who recovered. They say, I thought I was going to die. I was really convinced I was going to die. And I woke up the next day. I couldn't believe it. And it's like, even in their telling of it, they're not saying it in fear. They're not conveying deep fear. It's like, I've been sick this long. It takes like 2 weeks to go from beginning of hospitalization to death. It's usually 2 weeks to 21 days on average. And these people go down the tubes, they're going spiraling down, and they're not frantic. It's amazing to me to see and hear the stories of really acceptance. It's part of resiliency, is acceptance. Okay, this is the way it is. I'm gonna get a little religious here, but I've been dead twice. And
really?
Yeah. And there's a point where you go, live or die, I'm in good hands,
Right on.
Yeah, I'm okay either way. I'm okay. And so getting, that process of figuring that out is very important. And it's good to figure it out ahead of time.
Just saying. I don't know if any of you have ever heard, when I was in my counseling program, a book that was highly recommended to us, and we actually had to read it, was A Man's Search for Meaning by Viktor Frankl.
Yes.
And so that actually, and I highly recommend it to anyone that enjoys reading. It's available even for free online. And when you think about that time period, that era where we're talking about the Holocaust and Viktor Frankl being right there, being a witness and experiencing and sensing loss over something that was so tragic and unfair, and just being able to see his perspective when it comes to how he was able to find meaning is impeccable. And I definitely feel that it's all about, once again, that sense of perspective and how we choose to view the situation, acknowledging the fact that this has been a difficult situation and it's a tragic situation, and not invalidating the fact that there have been people who have really suffered, who have lost loved ones, and people whose life have been taken too soon in our eyes because of this situation. Yet at the same time, recognizing that in history there have been some very difficult and tragic moments where people have had no choice, or have made the choice, better yet, to rise. And beauty can come out of that. And going along the lines of David, when you think about even those that are believers, when you think about Paul, and when he writes Philippians, he writes Romans, he talks about the mind. He focuses on the mind, and he talks about the mind because I can imagine he went through some difficult stuff where he had mental struggles and he was imprisoned for something that wasn't technically meant to be imprisoned for. He had really not done anything wrong. And if he would have never taken the choice or made the choice of accepting the position he was in, he would have never written the letters that he did and impacted thousands and millions or millions of lives that he has today. So there, it is possible to find purpose, and not only purpose in this situation, but also refound purpose within ourselves when we get to that place of moving past the fear and we start to enter into the learning and even growth zone.
Yeah. And he wrote Philippians from prison. And then what about that part of the story, which I always find very interesting, when the shackles fell off in the earthquake, I think it was an earthquake, and he still didn't leave, and the prison guard was going to take his own life, and he said, wait, hey, we're still here. And so I think about when the people right now that are so despondent, and I talked to a friend last night who works at a hospital in Chicago, and said that, she said, Kelly, you really need to pray for Chicago, specifically for teenagers and children. They even had an 8-year-old that attempted to take their life. So they're having a high number of attempts of children and teenagers.
Well, that's really, really important.
So heartbreaking.
People, you know, young people, I, as an adult, I treat adults, and I think about how people cope. And you know what? The kids, I remember I'm old enough, I remember when we hid under our desks for fear, you know, we had drills in school twice a year. We had, say, an atomic bomb threat, and we had to duck and cover under our desks for fear of it. And we'd go home and talk about it, and our parents would say, well, if they would bomb in our area, this is the city they would bomb. It would be in that direction, and that's the direction the blast would come from, and you'd have to, you know, shelter. And we had a fallout shelter in our house, and it's like, I remember the nightmares and a sense of foreboding we haven't felt in this country since 1960. I'm that old. I can imagine that 8-year-olds and 6-year-olds, oh, daddy, mommy, they're going to go out. They're taking a risk. They're going out to get groceries, you know, and
you know, it's impacting the children because they hear and they observe.
Oh,
even
yeah,
my nephew, he told his mom this week he was afraid to die.
Yeah.
And he's 10. And what were we typically thinking about death at the age of 10? Maybe you were, but I wasn't, David.
Yeah. One of the benefits of being older, sorry. I've been through this before. But, oh my gosh. I mean, what you just said about these kids in Chicago, I mean, that's just really...
It's heartbreaking. So pray for Chicago, but of course, pray a hedge of protection around our children.
But it's their need to come to some kind of peace, you know, about fear for their parents. You know, if mommy, I was counseling this today with a family, and the older boy has autism, and his father was going back to work. Oh no, his mother. I guess his mother went grocery shopping. He's like, that's not safe. That's not safe. That's not safe. And really losing it. And so that is really something to think about.
The good news is children are resilient. I know, because I grew up and I had a pretty bad childhood. So I survived a lot. It wasn't a bomb threat, but let me tell you, it was threatening in my home. And I survived it because children are resilient. And I think that we have to be careful what we say around children, because they do, and how we model what's happening.
Yeah.
Because children learn from, you know, they parrot things as well as they learn through modeling. Not to talk about Bandura or anything, but anybody have any children?
Yes, yeah, and I was just thinking kind of what you were saying, you also have to watch what they see on TV and all the news and how much news you have on and kind of stuff. Because it does affect how they process information. And you don't want them to be so fearful of everything. So, and they're also not getting distracted as much because they don't have their friends.
Oh.
So they're not playing outside anymore, doing the other things that were distracted, that they wouldn't be so involved in, when I was younger, what they call adult conversations. Yes, yeah, yeah. But it's also a new norm for them.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah, this is definitely, but one of the things that David was saying as we were moving on to the growth zone was how people are risking their lives to help others and people are giving back. And how giving back and helping others is such a important part of being resilient.
Well, when we help others, it makes us feel better too. You know, how they had the surge in, you know, people adopting animals and things like that. You know, it just, and that's for companionship too with the animals. But, you know, those have always been some techniques that I've suggested with my clients that either are more depressed than anxious, but to, you know, think about how you can help others. Because that, you know, will release that serotonin when we feel good and help us feel better as well. Sorry, David, didn't mean to cut you off.
No, I'm glad you did. That's good. That's good. I was going to say my biggest exposure risk is we have a lovely neighbors, and the, 12 or 14-year-old girl is making biscuits every night. She's getting into baking. And she comes over with biscuits, not biscuits, muffins, really. I think they're yeast rolls. And she comes
yummy.
Home almost every night, hot out of the oven. I just pull the butter out, it melts on them. And my wife runs out to the mango tree and gets about 6 mangoes. And says, here, they eat like 6 or 8 mangoes every day. I'm like, thank God, because, you know, they're good mangoes, but I don't eat that many. It's like, you know, it's just, and this is this exchange, this giving and taking between neighbors that probably would not have happened.
Did you know your neighbors before?
We knew them, and we were in good terms.
Ish, but, yeah.
Oh, yeah, we wave and we talk. And, but,
well, that's
but,
nice, because a lot of people didn't know their neighbors. I never knew a lot of my neighbors, and people think I'm outgoing, and I am, and I'm an extrovert, but I didn't know my neighbors. I just, like, walk in, you know, it's my home. I didn't. I knew the dogs' names, but not the adults, and now we're getting to know one another better. So that's good.
Last week you told us you were an introvert.
What? I told you I was an introvert?
I think so. And I was sitting there going, no, you're not.
What was I on last week?
I don't know.
Did I wake up from a nap?
You're correct.
Somebody hit me on the head? I isolate. But that's not to imply that I'm an introvert.
I get it.
A lot of extroverts, we come out, go out into the public, you know, get our little like light charged up and then come back.
I call that friendly introvert.
Friendly introvert?
Oh, really? Okay. I like that.
Are you a friendly introvert, Jessica?
Yes, in smaller crowds. I don't do big crowds, but I definitely will talk up a storm and try to make people feel comfortable. But once it's done, I go back home and I need me time.
Good.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. But one thing going along with what you were all saying, I would say is also a way to help others is just being compassionate with one another. I think that during this period of time, and when you think about one of the skills in order to be resilient, I think compassion is a big one. Just being able to show kindness, even if it means just sitting and lending an ear, especially with a lot of people struggling with losing something or someone, we sometimes feel that we need to talk and say the right things and make people feel better. And sometimes with even that, we mess things up. and just being the power, recognizing the power of being present and just being there.
Yes.
That's a big one.
Yeah, I was thinking, especially when it comes to relationships, because I do a lot of relationship counseling. And now it's really important sometimes to just be able to listen to your partner. You know, just be present. Yes, I'm glad you brought that up.
Mm-hmm. Resiliency talks about, you know, it's bringing back into shape. So you're able to, you know, expand, you know, stretch, and then you just bring back into shape. Right now, I think what we're experiencing is we're being stretched so far that we're worried we may not take the same shape again.
Mm. You know? Yes, and that's even with us eating all the cookies and the sweets and stuff.
It's amazing how some people are, how we're handling that. And everybody seems to be different, but some people actually are like, I'll deal with it later. I'll deal with it later. I'm going to eat what I want. I'm withholding myself. I'm suffering from enough withdrawal. I'm not going to, you know,
right,
beat myself up for having a Snickers. And then other people actually, I know, are actually getting in better shape through this. So it's amazing what, you know, everybody's so different.
Right. And I think a lot of it is the mind. Yeah, what the mind is telling you and how it perceives what you see, and you having to figure out what is your truth, what's good for you.
Yeah,
definitely.
And I think people cope with their stress in different types. We can have, you know, for myself, it's to do something physical. You know, like Dr. Boucher was saying, I like running, I like, you know, keep moving, and that helps me cope. You know, other people, it might be something more, you know, meditation or yoga or something like that, journaling. So I believe, you know, if it's emotionally, you know, something you can do, or physically, you know, whatever, you know, type of activity you do that can help you with your coping. And I think that's important to recognize, you know, what's going to be the most beneficial, you know, to work with these thoughts and help us feel less stressed and anxious.
So you're a runner?
Yes. Wow. I have completed 4 half marathons, lots of 5Ks. I never want to run a complete marathon, but yes, running is my therapy.
Yes.
And you're very good at being disciplined with that. And so, and I agree with you, the whole physical exercise, it's phenomenal. And for me, it's the best thing for me, but I have to force myself to do it. It's got to, yeah. I have to have this little talk in my head, April, you need to. No, I don't want to. It goes back and forth.
Yeah.
Pretty funny, but this has been my challenge to drink a gallon of water a day. And so I purchased this bottle that helps keep me accountable with times on it. And it's just my making things work for me. So I'm just like Dr. Brown in the sense that I need to have those pep talks and kind of tell myself this is for your own good. So, and sometimes we may need to do that, and it's okay if that's the way we have to get ourselves to do good stuff or things that we know are good for us.
Find what works for you, right?
Here's my discipline.
Oh,
it is sugar-free.
Oh, good.
potato chips. No. You know, one of the things that I think is true, I'm pretty sure it's true, is that the more I think about me, the more upset I get. My fears, my what if, and what do I have to do to prepare, and what do I need to do next, and even the instincts to protect myself, you know, arguing or criticizing or, you know, making my case, whatever. And it, somebody said volunteering or helping others. I'm telling you, I think when we focus on others around us and their needs. And not to be, you gotta be careful not to stretch this into codependency and ignore yourself. You can't ignore yourself. You have to do self-care. But being aware that, my gosh, you know, this is not about me. It's not about necessarily the next person to me either, but I am going to think about them and I am going to help them if I can. Yeah, the fine line between codependency and self-care and still reaching out while I'm self-caring is, I mean, I think that's really healthy. The desire to be less conscious of my own precarious position, I'm going to be taken care of. I'm okay. I get somebody looking out for me. I'm not going to worry about that. I'm going to pay attention, be responsible, do the right thing for me. But I have plenty of energy left for other people if I've stopped worrying so much about my own situation.
Yeah. Well, I have a positive confession. I went to counseling last week.
Ooh, awesome.
Via telemental health. But, you know, they always say that, you know, you really should be going to counseling, you know, and that's one of the, a lot of times people just don't go. Psychologists, counselors, it's right. Just like, you know, and I find that ironic because, you know, what, I'm going to pay somebody? I should be able to figure this out. But I just thought, you know what, I really do want to come out of this better. And why not tackle a couple of these areas in my own life? And what better time than now? Because I do have a little bit more discretionary time because I'm not traveling to and from work, et cetera. So I started my free EAP employee assistance program. You get six sessions. So I went to one. And I didn't want to tell them I was a counselor because I thought... So anybody that is watching this, whether it's recorded session later or in the room now, and you're like wondering whether or not you should get a counselor, I encourage you to do that because we all need that objective, somebody to listen to us and give us an objective opinion back, a sounding board, if you will. And so I was really proud of myself, if for no other reason, that I did it, you know.
Yeah. Yeah, fabulous. See, most of us wouldn't have thought about doing that, but that's a great thing to do.
I think that, you know, that brings up a valid point that I've had a few clients in the last couple of weeks that said that they, you know, they're embarrassed or they, you know, it was a really hard thing for them to come in and start talking and getting therapy. And, you know, I think Kelly or Dr. Boucher, the point that you're making is that even therapists need to talk to somebody. And so I encourage my clients that, you know, feel that they, you know, or afraid or, you know, for whatever reason, they're reluctant to come and have therapy that, you know, and I was taught this in my graduate school, that asking for help is really a sign of strength. And knowing that you need to reach out and get that really is doing something strong. And so I think that's going to be the next maybe wave of this, that people, you know that they've been affected by this COVID-19, but they don't know what to do next. And so, and they're afraid, or they, for some reason, are reluctant to come and talk about it. So I think that it's good to know, you know, that you did that. It kind of makes me think, you know, maybe it would be a good idea to do that for myself. Because, you know, when the cup is full, there's no way we can help others. So, you know, or yeah. It's a little more difficult to help others. So to make sure that, you know, we're balancing our own stressors and, you know, feelings that we're having as well.
Even the best brain surgeon can't work on themselves, you know? And I know that a lot of times mechanics have loud mufflers, landscapers' lawns are all running amok. And I thought, you know what? I acknowledge that there's areas in my life that I don't have right thinking in. And so I don't have to go for 6 months or 6 years, but those free sessions check with your employer if you're employed. and see if they have the employee assistance programs, and your employer will not know what they are, you know. It could be about anything. And by the way, it's also EAP is offered to your entire family.
Right.
So, yeah.
And it's free.
It's a shout out for EAP.
Yes. Good. Yeah. Those are some good stuff in the sense of going to therapy and getting help. And I think that's part of the growth zone is when you know, hey, I can't do all this by myself. Mm-hmm. I have my weaknesses. I may need to get help. Yeah. Great. The other thing that I was thinking about is that also helps you get in that emotional state. And also when you're getting help, you have hope, and hope is what is needed in spreading.
Hope.
Yes.
Hope is big.
Yes. It's the thing that after Jesus died and when he came back, there was hope.
Mm-hmm.
Hope.
And a lot of times when people are in a very depressed state, they feel hopeless. So to help them realize that there can be hope and purpose, to help them turn some of those thoughts around of the hopelessness. What you said, Dr. Brown, is very, it's very integral and part of, working with depression to make sure that people can feel that there's some hope. Again, with the losses, there's that stage of depression too. So again, it all ties in together. Mm-hmm. So yes, definitely showing hope and purpose.
Right, definitely. And even when you talk about growing provides hope. Yeah, and that's why even I think children are so resilient, because there's a lot of hope. They're not stuck.
There's a verse in the Bible, I can't remember where it is, but it's without a vision, the people perish.
Ooh.
And so I don't think that people are perishing per se, but we have, now that the phases are opening here in Florida, when we went to phase two this morning, I was like a human jumping jack. And I was like, I had vision. I had some kind of like an idea of where this is going. Okay. Ooh, it's lifting. This is good. I have hope. And I was so happy. And we have to prepare that, hope deferred makes the heart sick, as Proverbs says. So we have to also kind of keep in our mind's eye, or remind ourselves that it could change on a dime. And so resiliency and bouncing back means, we're free right now, or freer, and things are changing, but we have to be aware that we might have to go back in the fall. So hopefully our, government and the people in charge will communicate, the mental health practitioners will communicate to people that, hey, this is happening for now, but be prepared, be prepared. Don't drop all your canned goods off at the local food bank, because you might need some of them for the fall. I don't know, but for now it feels really good.
Right, it's like we're talking about maybe like a plant that's coming up, and it's helpful. But sometimes, like you said, there may be stuff that causes our mind to worry, or we get all panicky, which are the weeds. And as you're talking about early, taking counseling and stuff, and doing other positive things, working out. And that's getting at all those weeds, so we can still grow, but we can't be like you say, we still have to be mindful of what's going on.
Have the black and white thinking, from all or nothing thinking, recognizing that to have a balanced mind, you need to be mentally prepared to find that middle ground.
Mm-hmm. I watch, as I said before, I watch the news, and I hear people complaining about inaccurate models of the disease and how it's developing, and controversy over different drugs and treatment procedures, and question different. There are 50 different experiments going on in 50 different states about how to reopen, at what pace, and what part opens first, and how do you do it. And I, in the confusion, it's, I think most people who hear the arguments are upset that you can sense their anxiety and their anger as they speak. Right. And what I'm realizing, and I actually feel it, is thank God we have so many different people working on all these different aspects from different points of view. And when people complain, there was a guy recently, he said, we need this, that, and the other, and every single thing he said we need, we're doing. Hmm. So it turns out the thing, his hair's on fire, because we need all these things. Oh my gosh, we need this, we need this, we need this, we need this, and go right down his entire list. Every single one of those things has been addressed. And I've had discussions with friends, and they've said, well, they don't realize this, that, and the other. They have some little inkling of some little detail, and they think that nobody else thought of it. And I'm watching, I'm reading the papers by all the other people. And guess what? They did think about it. They thought about it 2 months ago, 3 months ago. You just came up with this last week or 2 weeks ago. Well, they were on this 3 months ago, and you don't think they were, but they were. They were taking that into account. And you can see it in their writing. You can see it in their discussion from 3 months ago. They were saying the same thing you just said to me 3 months ago, and they thought about it. They're not failing to take that into account. And so I'm very, I think there's a call it ferment, that's a strange word, ferment or foment. I'm not sure which it is, but it's foment, I guess. And I don't even know what it is, I have to look it up. But it's this interchange of ideas and dreams, aspirations. This is what we hope would happen. This is what we want, our hope, and how we're coping and what we're gonna do and our plan for getting better. And it's all mixed up. There's a lot of voices. Sounds like confusion, but out of that confusion, there is a, you know, there are ideas are coming forward and steps are being made and things are happening. It's not gonna be like this forever.
But definitely, and I'm glad you mentioned, it's good that people with a variety of different talents are coming together to find a solution. Yes, I would love to hear what our audience out there are thinking about this conversation, and if they had any questions or things that they want to say.
What about Voshan? What are you, what are you thinking, Voshan?
Yeah, Voshan, I want to hear from you.
I've been very anxious the last 2 months. I live in Roswell, Georgia, which is like the suburbs of Georgia. And what I've noticed is when I go out to the grocery store, everyone just seems as if nothing's happened. It's just, I feel like I'm trying to catch up to everyone else when I don't feel comfortable in that place. Do you know what I mean? So I feel like less people are wearing masks, and it just seems like the hustle and bustle of traffic is starting to come back. And I feel like I'm not catching up with the groove, and it's causing me anxiety. So I'm just trying to work through that, because I feel like I'm being left behind in a race, and everybody else is going, and I'm like way in the back of the race. You know what I mean? So just having someone to talk to about how I feel about that. I mean, my daughter, I have a granddaughter. She's 5 months old. So my daughter me and her talk about it a lot, because she feels the same way. She doesn't feel comfortable leaving the house with the baby. And, you know, so we kind of like are game together with that same feeling, as well as my son. So it's just, I kind of feel like I'm lone. I'm very lonely right now. And even friends that I have are just kind of floating out more, and I'm just still kind of in that spot where I'm not moving. So I don't know how to how to get to that next step. I feel like I'm still kind of in between the fear zone and learning zone. I'm not even close to growth yet.
Well, won't you know when you're ready? You might not be ready to go all full throttle like it sounds like your community is. Isn't it okay for you to be a little bit slower for the sake of your granddaughter and see what else unfolds? Could that be it? Or do you want to get out and get moving more and you're afraid?
Yeah, I do feel like it's a good thing for me to kind of slow back a little bit. But then in another way, I feel like, I know you mentioned that you're going out of, you're going on a trip. And I was thinking, gosh, I would love to go on a trip in June just to drive down to Savannah by the beach. And then I was thinking, well, is that safe? You know, like I'm thinking like, you know, so it, I don't think I'm quite there yet. I don't think I'm there yet. And I've been praying about it. I've been, and maybe you're right. I just need to just let myself just go through the process.
Yeah, it's okay. It's okay to go slower than other people. They have three different lanes on the highway, you know, fast lane, the middle lane, and the I'm going to ride with my blinkers on, you know.
That's a great one.
Voshan, I kind of like to call it the reentry, and that's kind of how I've been dealing with this. You know, I was working from home for 5 weeks, and then we went back to the office, and I had a hard time going from working at home to being in the office 8 or 9 hours a day. And I'm allowing myself that grace of re-entering and doing it on my own time and what I'm comfortable with. And so, you know, and if you're, you know, if you're looking at the fear zone to the learning zone, you may go back and forth between some
yeah,
of
them. Yeah, absolutely. That's like, what I feel. Yeah. Because last weekend, the dispatch, I was in fear. Like, I was in total fear. I don't know what happened. Mm-hmm. I just went into like a dark hole. And then I started coming out of it, you know, like Monday or so, yesterday. Mm-hmm. And now I'm starting to feel like, well, maybe it's okay to, like, you know, just, you just go back and forth. Because I feel like everything went from 0 to 100 within 30 days. It just felt like there was no, like, stage. I thought the stages would be a little bit longer. So it's just weird. I don't know. It's very strange to see stuff opening back up. And it's a lot. It's a lot.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Does anybody, I'm not sure, I guess I haven't done this. I've done meetings like we're doing now. I've done fellowship groups or small groups of church or this conference a couple times. And this is really sharing with several friends at the same time and comparing, you know, you hear stories and you know, it's very valuable. This is amazingly good for us, for me.
Yes.
And I'm wondering, people have had FaceTime, but I don't use FaceTime. I never used FaceTime. And when I call people, I just go on the phone. But I find when I'm meeting with my clients and when I meet in these meetings, having the close-up, you know, when you have one person close up on the screen, on this computer screen, it's actually closer than sitting across the room from each other. And as you see facial expression, you see the feedback that you get from other people's responses is there's an exchange of high quality. And it seems to me that if I called my friend, not a client, not a conference, not a small group, what if I called one friend who's a real pretty good friend and did FaceTime Zoom, not FaceTime, but Zoom, computer screen, not a little phone. Yeah, not this screen, but this screen. Mm-hmm. What if I did that with a good friend and had just shared for 10 minutes? You know, I would no longer be alone. Okay. And I'd have somebody, all the stuff you just said, Voshan, I'm thinking, you know, Voshan needs a friend. Voshan needs somebody just to say, yeah, that makes sense. I see
you're
what
not
you
alone.
Think.
Yeah. You know, I always said, like, I was always told an only child is a lonely child. But yet, I went through a stage where I was extremely popular when I was younger. And then as I got older, I started getting more and more, you know, friends started getting less and less. And I started going back into that feeling again of being 9 years old, playing in my room alone, no friends, you know, and I was okay. But I don't think that's healthy. You know, I don't think it's healthy. And I'm single, so, you know, so it makes it, like, even a little worse, I think. So it's a lot of things that I got to work through. And then going through this, too, with the pandemic and all that, so it's a lot. I talk to April about it sometimes.
Yes, and I can, I was just thinking in the sense of going back. I mean, I've had that fear, and I haven't yet done a session in my office yet. But today, and I shared with Elizabeth, today I had something strange happen. Basically, a snake came into, found a snake into our house.
Oh my God.
Yeah.
What?
A snake.
Oh, I lost it.
Yeah, I almost lost it. And because of that, I decided I want to go back to my office now. We're back in my office.
So you had a snake come into your house, and you're like, I'm going back to work at the office.
Yes.
Did you not find the snake?
No, Sophie went into your room, and then the snake just happened. And now,
well, listen, April, let me just tell you, I was in Scranton, Pennsylvania, in my office, my first private practice, and while I was in session, my cat brought a snake in his mouth and dropped it just shy of the sofa, so the person that I was counseling couldn't see that my little Yeah, the name of my cat, brought me this gift, and he dropped the snake, and it went under the sofa they were sitting on.
Oh my gosh.
Now, at that point, I had an ethical decision to make. Am I going to continue counseling with the snake under there? Am I going to tell the, can I do it? Should I tell them? What am I going to do? So what do you think I did?
Kept counseling.
Yeah, I would yell and scream and ran
I told them, excuse, and by the way, it was a person with anxiety. Oh. And I said, excuse me, April, I need to tell you something. Yeah, brought a snake in, and he dropped it, and it's underneath the sofa you're sitting on. I was all serious. I thought she was going to freak out. And she said, well, let's find it. And she stood up to help lift up the sofa, and I never did find that snake. So I'm sorry for what you're experiencing.
Yes, luckily Coon came and got it out, but.
Oh, I thought you just said you didn't find it.
No, we found it, I wouldn't have been doing this if we didn't find it.
There's a book by Joyce Landorf, and it says, there's a snake in my garden.
But anyway, it's my perspective of going back to the office.
Yeah, I guess so.
Yeah. Safer.
Now you know you're ready.
I'm just amazed how God takes care of us. You have a client comes in for anxiety, and an anxiety provoking situation occurs first visit or whatever. And, mm-hmm. and you know, and you have to, and you're ethically sound by informing your client.
Yeah, I had to.
And your client handles it. And it's like, that was a therapeutic experience.
Yeah. I really used it to praise her.
That was fantastic.
Yeah. I couldn't have made that up.
That is really cool.
If it would have been a frog, I would have bounced, because frogs are, I have a frog phobia.
Yeah, me too. I don't like frogs either.
No. But we all have things that we're afraid of.
Yeah.
And
we all are in this recovery or post-recovery or going back from COVID-19.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Thanks for sharing, Boshan.
Yeah, do we live in the fear of it?
Appreciate all of you guys. Sorry I'm on camera. It's not happening today. I look crazy, but I'll be on the next one for sure.
Awesome.
Thank you.
Yeah, good. Does anyone else would like to share what's going on? All right. where we're almost close to the end. And like we were just saying, we're all in this COVID-19 together, which is what David has been saying, which is a great thing that compared to other pandemics or other things that have happened that are fearful, sometimes we're alone, but we're all in this together and we can benefit from one another. And I really appreciate each and every one of you guys. Final words, Elizabeth?
I guess the final words would be that this too shall pass, and that we are, like you said, Dr. Brown, all in this together. And I think the takeaway is always show grace. Always know that others are struggling. They may not show it, but, you know, and I think in the growth zone that I am empathetic with myself and with others. I think that's really important to remember that right now.
All right. Jessica?
I also agree with Elizabeth, recognizing that one way or another, we're going to come out through the other side, and it's a matter of just us taking hold of our thoughts and asking ourselves, what are we going to choose to focus on today, and what purpose do we desire to have for today? And it may mean that we have a different purpose every day, but just recognizing the areas that are causing the distress in our lives and being able to modify them and transform those areas by strategies, whether it's taking a walk or filling that time up with positivity. And just recognizing you're not alone.
Mm-hmm. Awesome, thank you. David?
I'm realizing I'm at the isolation at home with, in this case, my wife and my puppy dog, or my time with my clients online, I am really seeing more and hearing more and becoming more sensitive myself and people around me. I think people are moving in a very positive direction. Those who are paying attention to their relationships, I'm just seeing it over and over again. People are moving. Elizabeth used the term grace, and that's really what I'm seeing, and I'm seeing in myself and in others, and that people are, I don't see people escalating. I see people calming down, getting closer, and I think it's great.
Definitely. Dr. Kelly?
I'm still in the learning zone myself, and specifically the point where it says, I recognize that we are all trying to do our best. So if somebody does irritate me and I do have a shorter fuse, not just because I am short, but because I have less patience through all of this, I realize that, okay, slow your roll, Boucher, just relax, give people the benefit of the doubt, and recognize that everybody's just trying to do their best. Like, I almost got ran over by this elderly man with his cart in Costco, zipping through the aisle. I was like, man, he almost clipped me off. And I was a riddle like this, you know, and I started to defend myself, but not really through words, but just my stature changed because I felt threatened. Little 5-foot girl here, barely feeling threatened. And I just released it. And I just thought, you know what? I don't know. Kelly, you don't know if he is only has 30 minutes and he left his ailing wife and he's just trying to get everything real fast so that he can get home to her. You don't know. So be patient and recognize that we're all just trying to get through this and do our best. So I'm still in the learning zone.
Good, good, good. And I think we all are in that aspect. We're still learning from day to day, and there is no rush. We're doing this all together, one day at a time. One of the things that if you're on and you're listening and you would like more information about what we do, please put your address and stuff, and we'll keep you informed of what Cape Coral therapists are doing and how we're trying to help out and how we're each of us are also trying to do the best we can. Thank you guys so much for participating, and we hope to have this opportunity again for you guys to just, and for all of us to just talk about what's happening. I thank you, Kate Crawford, there for each of you. I appreciate
thank you for your vision.
Love
April.
Yourself.
Thank you.
Thank you, Dr. Brown.
Thank you.
Great. Thank you. That's kumquat.